In this episode, we're talking about creating logos, custom packaging, and branding that's going to help you stand out from your competition and ultimately crush them.
Hello and welcome to the Private Labeler Show, where we are dedicated to helping you take your Amazon business to the next level. Now, here is your host, Nick Landowski.
Hey, everybody, just checking in on you for episode number 26 of the Private Labeler Show podcast. We're helping 1,000 amazing entrepreneurs start an online business in 2016. I am your wonderful host, Nick Landowski. Just as the intro lady said, that's me. Really super pumped about today's episode because we have a very special guest for you guys. And we're going to jump into that in just a second. I'm going to play an interview that I did with my friend Eric Verdine, and we're going to talk about logos, branding, kind of custom packaging, all that kind of stuff, and how to really go about that stuff to help your brand stand out from the competition. Before we jump into that awesome interview, just want to kind of go over a few things here. So if you haven't left an iTunes review yet, please do so right now. I would greatly appreciate it if you went to privatelabelershow.com/iTunes and just simply rate and leave a sweet little review. I'd love to read your review or comment on a future podcast episode. And if you haven't yet already, please make sure that you subscribe to the Private Labeler Show by going to privatelabelershow.com/SUB. Simply drop in your email and I'll notify you anytime I have anything cool or unique or awesome to share that's going to help you. And if you haven't yet already, make sure you get involved with our Facebook Mastermind community by going to privatelabelershow.com/FB. So join the Private Mastermind group, get involved with the community, say hello, and start interacting with other like-minded sellers. All right, if you are new to the show, or perhaps you just didn't hear this message before, if you're selling on Amazon, you obviously know that you need UPC codes to activate or start new listings. So I always advise people to avoid buying those on sites like eBay because you just never know what you're going to get. I've recently switched over to easyupc.com for my UPC codes. So for all new listings and things like that, you can go to easyupc.com. And since you're a listener of the show, you can save 20% off of your order of UPC codes if you simply, on the checkout page, if you simply enter in the code PLSHOW. That's PLSHOW. Dropped it in there, you get 20% off of your order. So I just thought I'd mention that to you. Every little bit helps. So if that can help you save a couple of bucks on UPC codes, big win. Big win for you today. You save some money. Awesome. So check that out when you get a chance. So before we jump into this interview in just a second here, just wanted to kind of give an intro on it. I talked with my friend Eric, and Eric's been selling on Amazon for the past few years, and he's really into branding and creating brands that are kind of a long-term play here. So he's got a lot of really great experience in his past around not just selling on Amazon, but creating these brands. So dealing with things like logos, dealing with packaging, just the whole entire experience from A to Z. Whenever you sell a product, like, you know, what's the customer's perception and how is your brand being presented? And we talk about things like dealing with designers and reserving a domain name. They kind of cover a lot of different bases in this interview, but I thought that this would be a really fantastic interview to give to you guys because I know a lot of you guys out there do ask me a lot of questions about just reserving domain names, just getting started with the brand and logo design, stuff like that. A lot of times people are just really confused, like who should they hire? How does it all work? What do they need to do? So we cover a lot of that in this podcast interview. And it's really important to understand is that Amazon is becoming more and more competitive over the years, right? Or even the months. So if you plan on creating a brand for the long term, you're going to want to differentiate from your competition. And one way you can do that is by having, you know, really cool packaging, great logos, great branding overall, great marketing. All those little things can help you succeed long term and put your competitors really in the dust. So again, ask yourself, is this a hobby or is this a long-term play? If it's a long-term play, this is going to be a great podcast for you just to kind of get some tips, some strategies, some ideas, or a vision for where you want to take your brand. Now, Eric's going to go into a lot of detail and deliver a ton of value in terms of different resources that he uses. And we'll submit, we'll link all these in the show notes, and don't worry about remembering everything, but just an absolute plethora of knowledge being delivered in this interview that I'm really excited to bring to you. So enough babbling by me. Let's jump into this interview. All right, everybody. I'd like you to welcome Eric Verdine to the show. So thanks, Eric, for coming on the Private Labeler Show podcast. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your busy day to talk about branding and Amazon. So hopefully I didn't hack your name there or mess it up, but thanks for coming on the show, man.
Oh, absolutely, Nick. You got it. You hit it spot on the money right there. A lot of people get it confused, but it was an Ellis Island thing. So Verdine, Verdine's right.
Yes. All right. Hey, could you just tell the listeners out there, the person listening on the podcast right now, just a little bit of, you know, kind of who the heck you are, why should we be listening to you about brands and Amazon, and maybe just a little bit of your experience and background kind of relating to Amazon and brands and all the kind of good stuff that we're going to talk about today.
Sure thing. So went to school for liberal arts and then found myself in business, a lot of young people out there. Started out in boutique marketing firms and mostly marketing and strategic communications in Chicago. And then during that time, I, you know, busted my chops on some brand work, some creative. And now I just started selling on Amazon 2 years ago. I have one brand cooking on there right now. And then I'm developing a men's personal care brand that I hope to sell on Amazon, on Shopify, as well as some boutiques in Chicago. So really passionate about marketing and branding and what it can do for people's business.
Very cool. So you've been selling on Amazon for 2 years. What, just kind of for some perspective here, what have you seen maybe change on the Amazon marketplace the past few years? So I you know, in e-commerce and everything, things change rapidly, especially with the internet and all that. You know, one day to the next, it seems like, you know, like I said, things are always changing and you kind of have to adapt. But do you have any maybe just quick insight for the listeners out there on kind of how they need to stay ahead of the game?
Absolutely. I think the biggest change that I've seen is the sheer competition on Amazon. A lot of people have been talking about that, but it's definitely true. I mean, no doubt private labeling is an amazing business to go to, but a lot of people are flocking. The word's starting to get out. So it's not one of those, I'm just going to find a product on Alibaba and I'm going to throw it on Amazon. I'm going to start getting sales right away. Everyone is going to Alibaba to find products. So it's really important that someone who goes into this business or someone who's already there is finds means to differentiate themselves, whether that's going to a different marketplace to source products or modifying existing products pretty considerably, or just having a different brand there to really stand out in the game. So it's not just about, you know, finding a good product and then putting a listing up. You have to really pay attention to your listings, really pay attention to the packaging, the photos that you're doing. So the competition is steep. But that being said, it's still an amazing thing to do, private labeling.
I mean, yeah,
no doubt you can build a business on it. It just challenges us as entrepreneurs to be more innovative. So I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, because what it does is it forces us to bring more value to our customers. So
yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. And this is a great transition to what we're going to talk about today. Competition, obviously, like you said, brings better options at the end of the day to the customer. And that's a great thing. Now, I talk a lot on my podcast about kind of this fictitious idea of somebody that wants to start a brand. And I always use grilling accessories as kind of just this, like kind of this fictitious brand that somebody might be starting. And maybe let's just say they want to start a grilling accessories brand and they don't really know a whole lot about branding, or they have maybe a handful of ideas of products that are going to sell that they kind of vetted. And it's kind of, they're onto the doorstep here of picking a brand name. Maybe they have this vision in their mind. They want to launch 5 or 10 products for this grilling brand that they kind of had dreams about because they're passionate about it. How would that person start out with deciding on a brand name? It doesn't have to be grilling accessories, but that's just the example I use. Like, what's all involved in starting out with that brand name? Because that's kind of the first step. You have the vision, and now you need to actually take one action there and think of that brand name to then go on to the next step. So what ideas or what methods or steps do you have for that person that wants to create a brand, and how do they go about getting started with picking that proper brand name?
Sure thing. Let's go with that grilling accessories. I was thinking about different types of brands too before our conversation. Grilling came up. So I think when you already have that vision of what type of product that you want to sell, and you kind of have an idea of that audience, you know, you mostly thought of that accessory because it's something that relates to you or relates to people that you know. In this case, grilling accessories, you want to sit down and then write out who your perfect customer is. You know, put a name on them. Let's name him Phil. And you think of, okay, who's Phil? Who's their ideal customer? Maybe it's a guy who's 35 years old, who lives in the city, grills out for his family and his kids every once in a while. And you start to kind of build this identity for this person. So some people call this an avatar. And then you start to think, well, what are the brands that this guy's buying? Or what are the different things that he's interested in? And then once you start to formulate this kind of brief on who your avatar is, or who your perfect customer is, you can start to just start throwing out names. And I find it easier to throw out the more literal names, right? Like grillers, right? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. with two R's, or it might be, you know, coal, fire and smoke, or something makes it more literal to that practice of grilling. But then it can be something that's more abstract, that isn't necessarily directly related to the brand name, because you might go and find, and this is one of the steps you would do after you get those names, whether they're literal or more abstract, like, you know, Harry's, the shaving company, is a good example of a more abstract name that is somewhat in line with what they do, right? Harry being Harry and then shaving and things like that. But so once you have these literal names and then you have the abstract names, then you can kind of start seeing what's out in the marketplace in terms of a domain name. So I always think of what, even if I'm just getting my first product up, I want to think a little bit in the long term. So let's just assume that this brand that I'm making around grilling accessories, I might be able to make 10 or 15 products off of it. So it's a longer term play. If you were to make only grilling gloves are really popular private label Amazon products. And you say, oh, I'm going to do grilling gloves. You're only going to be doing grilling gloves, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you might want to have a broader grilling name, but then you go and you look at those domain names. So domains are essentially the www.mycompany.com.
Right.
That's what a domain name is. And the way that I think of domain names, they're like a piece of property that has no building on it.
Right.
And that's where your website is, right?
And do you recommend that they just go to like GoDaddy as an example and start going to town and seeing what's available and start to kind of generate ideas? Okay.
GoDaddy's a good place. And then DomainsBot is also a good resource. You can put in a domain name, and then what it'll do is it'll just spit out, you know, 50 suggested domain names that are around the name that you chose.
And that was DomainsBot?
DomainsBot. And there are other providers that do similar things to help get ideas, just, you know, shoot ideas to the wall. And I recommend you like really trying to go for the .com, but if you find a really great domain name and .com is unavailable, .co is also a good domain name that's coming up. Technically, it's actually from Colombia. So when you see .co, .it, .ly, those are related to different countries. So Bitly, for example, which is a URL shortener, is actually from Libya.
Okay. So let's just say we're going on GoDaddy, right? Or whatever. We have some mm-hmm, ideas mm-hmm. here. And we haven't even launched a product yet, or maybe we have a few products, but we're thinking about branding everything now. Do you recommend at this point, let's say we decide on a brand name and there is mm-hmm. a available domain name that isn't taken or anything like that. Do you recommend that this person then spend a couple of dollars to simply just reserve this domain name at this point? Is that kind of the step that we're at?
Absolutely. If you think about it as an investment, it's a very, very, well, if you think of the private label business as an investment, a domain is a very little investment. If you get one that's maybe 10 or 12 bucks, and most of the domain names that you're going to want to get are going to be 10 or 12 bucks. But you'll find out you'll be shocked by how expensive domains can get. It's not uncommon to find a domain that's $15,000. I mean, obviously that would be an imprudent move to go buy a $15,000 domain before you've proven a product.
Yeah.
But in that case, just get the one that's like the different tag, you know, the .co, the .io, whatever, choose that one first to then test. But I would absolutely say, yeah, that's a good investment to make.
Yeah. So
Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't want people to think that all of a sudden they got to start building this website out because they got a domain name. It's kind of just a, for formalities purpose, you're just, like you said, you're investing. So you're just going to reserve that domain, buy that domain. Yep. You might not use it for a long time. Who knows? Especially if you're just launching on Amazon. So at least you have it.
Absolutely.
Though, right? At least so that way down the road, you don't find that somebody stole it from you.
Right. Exactly. And another way you can go about it, you can start using that domain name right away. And we had talked, Nick, at the beginning of the conversation about competition and always being ahead of the game. One of the things I recommend that's really simple is once you buy that domain name, say grillproducts.com, when you start reaching out to manufacturers, then you can use that, you know, nick@grillgloves.com to your manufacturers, even if you don't have a website yet.
Right.
But that just legitimizes you.
Yeah.
Exactly. It legitimizes you a little bit instead of, you know, basketball89@hotmail.com. you know, and it's where, you know, that little tweak in your email can really go a long way when it comes to dealing with manufacturers, especially if they're in the United States.
Right. So let's kind of transition along. Let's just say, you know, we decide on a domain name and we're kind of moving along and we kind of have, again, this vision, right? This idea of where we want to take things. And we decided on this domain and then we kind of want to move it to the next step, which comes the natural thing for a lot of people is, well, I want to get a logo made. And they want to know how that works. Now, I just, like many people, I suck at graphics, right? But I could tell you what looks good if somebody presents something to
me, like most
people. So what's the next step for somebody? Let's say decide on that domain name. And now I need to get some ideas for logos created. And I'm treating this as a business. And this is a long-term play for me. So I don't want to just necessarily settle for something that I'm going to create myself. Kind of want a professional to do this. What would you recommend that this seller do at this point to start to get logos created and other types of graphic materials?
Sure thing. The first thing I would think of is what is my timeline and what do I need? When do I need this logo? Because that's going to determine where I go to find it. For instance, we know of Fiverr. So Fiverr is, you know, the website that can do a multitude of tasks for $5. That's what they claim. There's a lot of designers on there. And you can pay extra to get things turned around quickly. And a lot of people go to Fiverr to have that, you know, cheap alternative and get things turned around faster. But the quality is going to go down a bit. Mm-hmm. There's also things like 99 Designs, which is a design contest platform where you submit your creative. They have a creative brief in the back end that you fill out of different types of logos that you like, colors and so forth. Once you submit that, designers from all over the world submit starting designs for your logo. So then that's a really great resource because you can see, oh, this is all the different things that people are you know, providing to me, right? So if you think, oh, I don't really know what to do, but I know what I want to be a glove, you know, a grill glove over a grill fire, and you have that, but you don't know what form it should take, 99 Designs will be able for you to see all of these different things that creatives come up with.
And then you can have actually like your own friends or family or your Facebook audience kind of vote on them as well to kind of add a little excitement to it, because that way then you can kind of proof or validate the concept or the design as well. And I see a lot of people doing that, you know, they're creating logos for their businesses and they'll shoot it on the Facebook page and almost have like a voting type of thing. So
absolutely,
it becomes very powerful.
Absolutely. Now the thing with 99 Designs, and I've run several 99 Designs contests from the cheapest level, the bronze level, which I believe is $300. All the way up to the $1,200 level, and you're going to be getting different expertise around those levels. So the guy doing the $300 designs, you're going to see things that are similar to Fiverr, and I've also used Fiverr for several projects as well, just to get the juices flowing. And so you're not going to get a premium designer at the $300 level, and you will at the $1,200 level. But the trick is there's two things here. One is this thing called a hidden contest. So if you start out a 99 Designs contest right away, the designers who are submitting their logos to you will be able to see all of the designs that are being submitted. The issue with that is that when two or three people submit logos, everyone else is going to submit things that are very similar. At least that was my experience, and that was on the bronze level. When I called the 99 Designs representatives, they let me have a closed contest, meaning designers would submit logos and they wouldn't be able to see what anyone else was submitting, so that you got a lot of different ideas that are all over the board.
Okay.
The other thing to keep in mind is this idea of a guaranteed prize. So 99 Designs says, we'll give you we'll give you your money back if you're not satisfied. But if you guarantee, so all the designers know this and they're thinking to themselves, well, heck, do I want to spend all this time making a logo if this guy might just pull the plug and get his money back? So if you do a guaranteed prize, designers actually see there's a little icon on the screen that says this is a guaranteed prize. You'll get many more entries, and 99 Designs will tell us you'll get many more entries, but you'll lose your money. So when we got the platinum package, we ended up, and this is why it's so important to understand your audience and be confident in your product before you start spend lots of money on design, is we did a closed competition, guaranteed prize, and we ended up pivoting our business and not being able to use the logo. Oh. So you want to, you know, it is good to have premium design, no doubt. And as you grow your business, you want to really think about that, because you're just adding more value to that customer. But before you really invest that money, you want to be certain of your trajectory. Otherwise, you're opening yourself up to losing that money.
Okay, now let's just say that we don't want to use 99 Designs. Maybe we're trying to just test the concept, and we want to do something a little bit better than Fiverr. So we're headed to Upwork, right? We're actually going to just hire a graphic artist. You know, a lot of people do that. I've done that in the past before for other things I've worked on. Do you have any tips to finding like a really good designer that way? Or like what's the process like? So when you reach out to Upwork, yeah, you're going to get a lot of people that are going to come knocking on your door saying, hey, I can design whatever it is you need. What are some basic tips that you have to find a good designer?
Sure thing. Make sure that they have a good portfolio or a website that they can point you to look at it. That will prevent people who may be just doing this on the side and not as their full-time gig. You can kind of vet those people pretty quickly. But if you're trying to get someone that does this professionally for their 9-to-5, or they know they do it on their own, they're going to have a portfolio or a website that they can go to, that you can go to. And the other thing too is vetting graphic designers who specialize in things, right? So if the designer is really good, they're going to say that they specialize in something. They specialize in logo, or they specialize in packaging. They're not going to say that they specialize in logo, packaging, you know, printed material, Squarespace.
It's usually narrow focused. Yeah, it's usually one thing or so.
Exactly. And the same thing goes for if you're, you know, one of the things I thought of, I used was Craigslist. And I wanted, because I wanted to be able to sit down with my designer and work with them on what they're coming out with. So you can meet at a coffee shop. And what I do is I put a Craigslist post out and I say, these are the things that I need. This is the timeline that I need. Please send me your portfolio, a website, you know, different types of work that you've done. And then I create a folder in my email so that all of the submissions just go, don't flood up my inbox. And then I can just go and I can click through to different designers who are in my area that I can meet with in person. The other thing, you know, it's great to look up referrals. The best graphic designer I found through a friend. I casually asked, hey, do you know any designers? And she goes, actually, I just met one at one of these meetups that I went to. You know, here's her contact info. And I met with her, and she was one of the best designers I've ever seen. I mean, she was very, very expensive, but she was very, very, very good. And I was able to meet with her in person and work with her that way.
Excellent. So here's a question though for you on that. You obviously have the mindset of kind of the marketing and stuff like that. But let's just say I was somebody that knew I wanted a really cool logo and packaging and all the stuff created for my brand. But again, I was one of those people that I couldn't visually explain, or I couldn't be creative enough to explain to this designer what I wanted. How does that work? Because I think that's a lot of people where they know they need to hire a designer, but they don't even know where to start. Like, how do you even tell them to create anything? What do you have as far as some advice for that person? Do you just let the designer kind of just run with it? and let them kind of handle that, because they're the creative brains of the process, and you just kind of be the judge on, you know, what they produce. Is that how that works?
You definitely don't. I don't recommend, unless you really trust the person, you've seen their work, I don't recommend having them run with it. Oftentimes, people who aren't familiar with the creative process will think, and I was dealing with this with my business partner as well. He says, let's just give it to the designer and then they can make it up. And I was letting him know. I was like, hey, man, that's not how they work. You have to be very, very specific in your ask, or else they can't take what's in your mind and put it. Because even though if we're not super creatives, like I don't have the technical skill to make things in Illustrator. We all know what we like and what we don't like. So one of the best ways to kind of discover what we can send our designers is to look for different logos on Google Images. So say simple grill logo, or maybe grill cartoon logo. And you start putting these keywords in for the type of logo that you're thinking of. And then you'll start getting ideas of what your style is and what your style looks like. And what you can do is just copy those photos into a Word document or a Google document, and then share it with the prospective designer to say, this is the type of logo that I'm looking for. And you can even broaden yourselves. You might say, baby logo, you know, cartoon baby logo. If you're doing, say you're just doing baby bags exclusively, searching baby bag logo might be too specific. So you can say baby bags. Or for the grill logo, you might say, well, my audience is, you know, our manly guy, they like manly things. So you say manly logos, and that makes that search a little broader. So you can get more ideas, and then you just choose and pick and have about five logos that you can send to that designer. And then in terms of colors, cause you might say, well, I don't know, do I just make it blue, or how do I add two or three colors to it? So one of the things you can type in the search engine is, keyword. So whether that's, you know, manly X or baby, you know, baby or women, and then you put color palette.
Mm-hmm.
So what a color palette is, it's just a combination of three or four colors that work together, that work well together, but are different, that you can use for your logo. So you can say, you know, manly color palette or women color palette. And you put that into Google and you look at the Google images, you will have all of these different colors that will come up that work very well together. And that's another thing that you can just pass off to the designer.
So colors matter a lot, right?
Colors matter big time.
So obviously if we're doing grilling accessories, we wouldn't want to have a pink logo unless we were going after some tiny niche little female grilling superstars or something like that.
But exactly.
It's got to be more or less, if we're going after our avatar is, let's say, men, and like you said, 35 years old, we want to find what colors are attractive to them, or what, you know, what they respond to. Blue is being kind of the common one, but there might be other colors within that palette that may also work.
And I mean, and that's a thing too, is that there are thousands of colors of blue.
Right.
So saying blue or red isn't specific enough. So if you're like, well, I want something blue, but I don't know what type of blue it is, then you can put in Google blue color palette and you'll get thousands of pictures of just blue. And there's another cool little trick. There's a Chrome extension called ColorZilla. And a part of ColorZilla, you click on it and it has this thing called a color picker. And what it will do is it will make your cursor this little droplet. And when you put it over in your browser on, let's say, a picture or a color that you like, it will show you the proper color code, which is called a hex value. So then you can just pass that code on to your designer and you don't have to really think about it.
That's very cool. So that's just a Chrome extension that gives you the dropper. That's very cool. What was that called again?
It's called Chrome ColorZilla. And the tool in ColorZilla is called Color Picker. And this is, you know, this is something you can include in the show notes, but it is an amazing tool.
Okay, very cool.
It's very, very, very helpful.
Now let's just say we kind of nail down, you know, the color and the scheme, and, you know, we get some ideas that we send to the designer based on maybe other logos that we kind of like, and they start creating. You know, what other tips can you give us so that way you actually get what you want from that designer, that they actually produce the logo or the images or graphics that you in your mind visualize? How do we make sure that they actually produce that then?
Sure. Well, the next thing too is that type. What is your name of your logo going to say? So you might think, okay, I want a guy with a grill or a hand grill glove or whatever. And then you need to have your grill glove name underneath. So that's called the typography, the typeface underneath. So how do you pick out, so font, how mm-hmm. do you pick out the font basically? One of the tricks I like to do is go to Canva, and Canva is a free online platform to mess around with different design things. It's absolutely amazing. Definitely check, you know, everyone out there, check it out. And then make the dimensions of your design when you log in, it says create custom design. Make a really, really big white space and then drag their different font options. You can look at all these different fonts on there together in one place. And then that's a way that you can look at your fonts and you can pass your fonts along to the designer as well. If you don't really know, you know, what type of font that you want. You could also go to a website called wordmark.it, and that allows you to put in your name of your business, your company, and then it will just give you a multitude of different fonts all using that same words. You can just scroll through that. But that's another way to find out the typeface that you want.
Okay, very cool. Some great resources there. Yeah, I use Canva a lot for a lot of different things, and I talk about it quite a bit. It's kind of one of my go-to tools for graphics. Absolutely. And things like that. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
So okay, go ahead. Yeah, kind of continue along here. So we got the colors, we got the graphics, kind of yep. ideas that we searched out. We got fonts now. So we're kind of getting there at this point. So what else do we need to know?
So you want to put that all in one document. So you're going to have you're going to have your audience. Like, who is your audience? Not the big doc that we discussed sitting down and talking about. Really, just two or three sentences, who your primary audience is, and then have a little bit about what your company does. Put your specific color codes in there. You can even copy and paste that color palette that you just got. Copy and paste the five different logos that you saw on Google. Maybe give a little color about what you're wanting it to be like. Maybe, you know, you want that glove. You want to be drawn almost like a pencil. You put those specifications in there, and then make sure you provide a timeline for the graphic designer. So these different programs do that well. They give you time expectations so everyone knows. But if you're dealing with someone freelance on Upwork or Craigslist or a family or friend, make sure you're just clear on how long should it take for them to get the logo done. Because if you're not clear, then it leaves it open for them to do whatever they want. And you want to kind of be in control of the project. So make sure you have that. What does draft one look like? How long should that take? Once they receive feedback, how long should it be for them to get a draft two out? And then you just have that document. And the last thing you want to put on that doc is, what file formats do you want your logo in?
Mm-hmm.
So these are those picture formats. So you have .png and .jpg, JPG, there we go.
Yep.
And then you have the different types of what they're called, design files. So design files are the technical files from the programs that these designers are working in. They're usually going to be Adobe Illustrator. Sometimes it will be Photoshop, and sometimes it will be InDesign. You don't really have to worry about it too much, but just make sure that you get the design files from what they worked in. You might not have these programs, but you want those, because those are the original files that the designer worked in, and then you can take those files and pass it off to another designer if you want. So it's kind of the material in which they built your logo. If they only send you the JPG logo or the PNG or the PNG file type, you really can't modify your logo.
Right. Any good designer that's been around a while will usually provide you with a multitude of different file formats at the end. Yep. When everything is good.
Yep.
Now that all kind of, like, if you're going on Fiverr, for example, that might be an upsell for them to give you those source exactly. files or whatever. But it's really important that when you're working, then when you're taking these logos, let's say to your design or to your supplier or your factory at this point, it's really important that you understand that not all these suppliers are up to speed on all these different file formats.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. I have a supplier that I work with personally. I can send them pretty much whatever, and they can figure it out as far as conversions or whatever it might mm-hmm, be. They're pretty handy. Mm-hmm. But I do also have another supplier that I work with that I have to provide them with the .ai. And they don't know how to do converting or different. They're not real good with that kind of stuff. But .ai seems to be, in my opinion so far and experience, the more popular format that a lot of suppliers want.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so just request that for certain from your graphics person, whoever that is. And then you could obviously do the conversions and do the .png or the .jpeg yep. for your own references as well. That's pretty simple to do. But try to get that designer or that graphics person to give you all the relevant file formats. So that yep. way you easily have those at your disposal, correct?
Yep, that's right. I always go for over-explaining and then under-explaining, because then you are cutting, it might take longer to fill out that form, but it will cut out the back and forth between you and the designer. And when everything's laid out, this is the timeline, this is the file, these are the files, there is no question. If there's an issue, you can just point to that document that you sent them and say, no, we agreed that you were going to send me X, Y, and Z. So I always like having that as well.
Gotcha. So anything else to add on that before we kind of transition to the packaging aspect of everything, or?
Let's see. Pinterest is also a great resource in terms of looking at different logos. What I've done in the past too is my partner and I actually designed our packaging in Canva and our labels in Canva, and they were complicated designs. And then what we did, we sent those files. We downloaded them as a PDF, and then had our the designer at our manufacturer actually recreate them into a design file. And that was just a little bit of an extra fee. It was maybe $100, but that's not much when in terms of hiring a designer. So that's always an option as well.
So you actually talked to your factory and they had somebody on staff there that actually
right.
could deal with the technical aspect of the design,
that's
right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now that's just something just for the listener out there. I talk a lot about like even things like photography or stuff like that. Sometimes the supplier or factory that you're working with might offer a lot of additional services in that realm of like photography and graphics. All you have to do is ask, like, do they have somebody on mm-hmm, site or on mm-hmm, staff? Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't. They don't do anything with that, and that's fine. But don't be afraid just to ask if they have somebody on site that can help you with this process, even if it's just converting or retooling something or reconfiguring some files or something like that. It's just at least worth an ask.
That's right, especially because the sales person, the sales rep that you're talking to, is just thinking about selling the inventory as opposed to the other services.
right.
And like you said, they're just not thinking about it.
So let's just say we got all these ideas and we got some designs come in and everything looks good. Let's say we decide on something, but what could you say ultimately for that seller out there that wants to make their brand stand out compared to everybody? You mentioned at the top of our call here that there's so much competition and you have to do these little things, let's say with logos, design, packaging. That's one way that you can stand out from everybody else. We'll talk about custom packaging in just a second here, but what else can you mention that the seller would want to know to have that leg up on the competition so that their brand can stand out compared to maybe the other five similar brands that are out there already on Amazon?
Sure. One of the quotes I love about brand is that brand is like a reputation. It's built on what people think of you, not what you think of you, but what you think of yourself, right? So if you're thinking of, okay, I want to have a premium brand, or I want to have this premium brand, this perception of a premium brand, but you have, you know, not a great logo, not great packaging, then people aren't going to think that you're a premium brand.
Right.
So you have to be honest with yourself. Okay, does this, you know, let me compare this to, I like comparing things to subscription box services, because even though in the private labelers are subscription box, I mean, subscription box people are private labelers. But in this space, in the Amazon space, we're not necessarily going to be opening up subscription services. But one of the reasons why I like comparing ourselves to them is because these subscription box services need to present themselves entirely to the customer just by a delivery. And that's the same for us. Like, we don't have brick and mortar locations where people can come in and we can talk with them, or they can see what our store looks like. Our store is our product and our packaging. So
it's just a web page, essentially, right? That they're looking
right,
at on
yeah,
their phone or on their tablet or on their computer. And that's the right. chance that we get, and that's it.
Right. Well, I mean, we have the chance for when they receive our product.
Sure. That's after the fact, though.
So right. That's after the fact. But if we're in a consumable category like health and beauty, or if we, you know, people are going to want to show their friends our products, we want to have that. That fantastic brand there, because it's easier to retain a customer than it is to acquire one.
Right.
So we want to make sure we have that good packaging when brand image when they receive our stuff, even if it's like in our emails, you know, in our feedback emails when we're asking for reviews, we want to make sure our language is tight. Maybe our image, we have some images in there. If we're giving an ebook, we want to make sure that looks really good, and the colors and the text and the voice matches across all of
yeah. So you're talking about consistency across the brand. Yeah. So it's not just the logo; it's everything that kind of revolves around it. From every time we can communicate with that customer, no matter what, if it's the packaging or those emails, everything matters. It's all a part of the big picture with the brand, not just I have a really cool logo, therefore I can not care about anything else. So if you want to be premium, you have to be premium 360 degrees, essentially, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's transition into custom packaging. Let's just say that I have established myself maybe on Amazon and I want to now start to differentiate myself a little bit more from the competition and I'm selling well and maybe I got a Shopify site that I'm thinking about bringing offline and I'm really serious about this now and I want to explore custom packaging. Why would somebody, like, what are the benefits of custom packaging, do you think? Like, what are the reasons why somebody would actually want to spend the money on it?
Yeah, exactly. Again, I would say that it goes with that idea of our packaging is like our brick and mortar. So if you go into a really nice brick and mortar store and you see that they have really cool walls that are made from brick and then they have wooden clothing hangers and you say, wow, this is a really premium place. And that's before you even think of picking up the product or before you even use it. So when we can give that look and feel to our products before our customers even use it, then we are ahead of the competition. And that because they're liking us before they even use our product. And again, I go back to those subscription services. We've heard of them like Harry's, Birchbox, Stitch Fix, the Dollar Shave Club. I recommend just getting a trial of those just to see how they do their packaging. Because when you see it, you're getting this entire customer experience just for things like razor blades, right? Or a pair or a t-shirt. And then it's an opportunity for us as well to market ourselves. So I know with Amazon terms and guidelines and things, we need to be careful with how we do it. But we also have to think of ourselves like the bigger brands who do put those marketing materials and make it part of that customer experience. One of the ways that we can do this, I mean, it's a way for us to build our relationship with our customer long term and to market more of our products. So with good custom packaging, we might be able to put our social icons on there and our website. Maybe we want to give a discount code for their next order, or we want to say, hey, refer your friend using this code and you get $5 off, right? So give them so much that they feel compelled to stay in that relationship with you, whether that's buying a product or telling a friend or going to your website and giving them your email with a landing page. There's a multitude of opportunities with having really good premium packaging. Again, it's that look and that feel. If everybody out there, if you're in the personal care, let's use beard, beard's really hot right now. So we're going to say, beard lotion or a beard comb. What's going to be better? A beard comb in a poly bag or a beard comb in a nice, cardboard, box with cool foil in it, that just giving that customer that experience. And then when they open it up, they see your logo with your email address or your Twitter handle or something, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's all of these touch points with a customer that we can get with them in our packaging.
Now, a lot of times people too, let's say, well, if you have the premium experience with the packaging and everything involved with it, that you can kind of charge more for that type of
100%
type of service as well. So now you're talking about potentially growing your margins and setting yourself apart from the competition that's maybe just fighting for the scraps. And now you can raise your price appropriately and really stand out from the competition. So if they look at your Amazon listing as an example and they see that you're $10 more than everybody else, but then you have in your photos, you have maybe some of your packaging being shown and things like that.
That's right.
And you offer that premium experience. Then that customer kind of, there are a lot of customers out there that do and will support premium brands and products because they want that experience beyond the product. They want the service.
Absolutely.
And that's what they expect. So there's just one way that you can stand out and charge more and obviously make a little bit more money with margin and things like that, but just
Absolutely.
Deliver that overall better experience from A to Z, essentially, right?
That's right. It's so incredibly nuanced in terms of the whole customer experience. I recently read the Steve Jobs biography, which I really recommend, but he has patents in packaging. Steve Jobs has his name on patents in his packaging because he understood that the packaging of his Apple computers are a part of that customer experience. And we have to kind of approach it that exact same way because it's the perceived value.
Right.
So you're saying the perceived value, and we can absolutely, we should charge more for it.
Yeah. So how does somebody get started? Let's just say there's a listener out there right now going, yeah, I want to differentiate. I want to be better than my competition. They know who their competition is. And like, where do they get started? Do they just talk to the factory and say, hey, what packaging options do you have available beyond what you're showing me right now? Or how does that really work? I mean, do you know what somebody should be doing?
Sure thing. Definitely ask the manufacturer because they're your first point of contact. And it makes it easier too, because you don't have to, if you really like your manufacturer and they really like you, they should be willing to help you find either source the packaging themselves, or they might have partners that they haven't discussed that provide more premium packaging. You can also find premium packaging providers on Alibaba. One of my buddies who is a private labeler did that exact thing, and he had his product shipped from the manufacturer to the packager in China, and then he had the fulfillment to Amazon happen from the packager.
Huh.
And he said that the shipping in China was extremely inexpensive. He was shocked, in fact, how cheap it was. And that's a great, great, great way to add that value with minimum cost and minimal effort as well. And a good way to go above the competition. So it's just a matter of doing a little bit of background research. There are also manufacturers of packaging in the United States. I'm using one myself that is inexpensive.
Okay.
That is fairly inexpensive. I mean, if you're thinking, you know, the packaging I'm using for some of our personal care products are between, you know, 75 cents to a dollar a piece. And if you're selling at a premium price, that is really not that expensive to give that other, you know, that other customer experience there.
Because you're going to be able to cover your increase in packaging costs anyways by charging a little bit more. So it'll be covered.
Exactly.
And beyond that,
exactly,
you'll be able to make a little bit of profit off it, I'd imagine,
exactly,
in a lot of cases. So do you, some of these different third-party packaging companies, do they usually have somebody on site, a team on site that can help with design, or is that left for you to do as well with hiring your own designers and stuff like that?
They usually have designers as well. Now that's an added cost, but you can do the exact same thing with the way that you went to find someone with a logo. You can find a packaging designer.
Okay.
So that you basically use that exact format that we use in finding a logo, and you just apply that to your packaging design as well. Now, one of the things you have to keep in mind too is that you're going to have to make the words, the copy, if you will, on the packaging. You have to provide that to the designer. But it's basically the exact same way as you would do a logo.
Okay, that makes sense. So you just give that to them, and do they generally just kind of roll out some samples from you, or are they locked and loaded with once you deliver them the files and stuff like that? How does that work?
It's up to you. I recommend getting a working prototype. It will cost just as you would a product, because you never know the colors that appear on the screen are often very different than the colors that are printed out of a machine. And in fact, our manufacturer for our product said to us, they go, hey, if you want to send us your prototype, your box prototypes, we'll look them over and adjust our colors on your labels so that they match, because our printers are different.
Okay.
So you want to keep that in mind. I suggest getting that working prototype so you can look at the dimensions, because if you order, you know, 500 products and you want to get this premium packaging, you order 500 boxes and find out that it's a quarter inch off, then it's, you know, it's donezo. You need to get a whole nother order of boxes. So definitely get the prototype.
Here's another benefit that I just thought of. Taking your product. I mean, I know that this isn't the dream of a lot of people when they first start out, but it kind of becomes it as their brand develops and matures, is once they get custom packaging, let's say they're crushing it on Amazon and they have maybe their own e-commerce site. The next endeavor for a lot of people, for a little big picture thinking, is actually retail at some point.
Absolutely.
If they really love their brand that much, and if you have that cool packaging, maybe it's just starting out small with some local retailers just to see what happens there. And I'm not saying that anybody has to go in this direction at all whatsoever. Definitely not required. But the inner Shark Tank in me kind of got me thinking that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you can think about if you have a cool enough presentation of packaging, there might be a lot of retailers also interested in your product down the road.
Absolutely, and it's baby steps. One of my buddies, another private labeler, one day just walked into a shop in Chicago and started talking to the person, said, hey, I this is something I sell. Hey, here are a couple samples. Are you interested? And he had a conversation, and then he just sold, you know, eight units to them. Mm-hmm. That was it. Just mm-hmm. 8 units. And that's really nothing. And it's a very small sample, but, you know, times 10, and say people start liking it, right? Then they'll order more from it. It was just a sample. So it doesn't even have to be, when you think of selling retail, it doesn't need to be Macy's or Walmart or whatever. It can just be these little shops.
Yeah, exactly. It could be local, and then it can kind of maybe a little bit of a chain or a regional thing. Who knows? And they Absolutely. Might also have a website that they're willing to put your product on as well. You have no idea how powerful that could be. And that's just an added channel or stream, because at the end of the day, you don't want to be too overly dependent upon Amazon. You want to obviously, as you grow, have different options out there, because just like with anything, Amazon changes. So down the road, mm-hmm. if you have other channels that you're selling off of, you're just you're helping yourself out and your business out in the long run by not being too dependent upon one thing. But I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here for the listener dealing with sure. that. But just to kind of to wrap up custom packaging, I mean, you did mention insert cards, and I had a whole podcast episode talking about how I'm using those from a marketing purpose. But how critically important do you think these insert cards are, or additional marketing materials that you include? I know all the major brands obviously do that. When you buy a product, you have all the stuff that they're trying to get you to opt in for or buy or whatever, or accessories. But is that stuff that's fairly easily creatable, that you can create fairly easy with your own factory or supplier, different marketing materials? And if so, what types of messages should they be putting on there?
Absolutely. I highly recommend, whether it's insert cards or it is a little how-to guide that has some of your contact information on it or a promotion, you should 100% be using some type of insert in a product. Before this call, I saw a quote. It says, "The marketers who will last are the ones who think relentlessly long-term and put quality content and recognize the value of building deeper, lifelong relationships with their customers." And this idea, you know, that idea goes, I think, into giving them these good packaging and these good inserts. Because you're building that long-term relationship, you're connecting them from your product, you know, from your product to your website or to your social media account. And you're going to build that longer-term relationship and hopefully giving them an amazing product that they're going to want to show their family and their friends, which will in turn make more customers. So if you think of what's the worth of one customer, well, it's essentially infinite, because if you get an advocate out there that's willing to tell 10 friends about it, that's a lot of advertising dollars saved.
Right. Absolutely.
A lot of people are talking about PPC, which is super, super important. And I was in digital marketing myself. I totally recognize how important it is, but we can save a lot of money on there when we create amazing customer experiences. And that's going to happen with things like insert cards. And they are very, very, very easy to make. Canva has plenty of templates out there. That's just literally drag and drop. Fantastic, you know, little promotional cards that you can stick in your products, or again, that how-to guide and very, very subtle things. I mean, having a little Facebook icon and an Instagram icon and a Twitter icon at the bottom of an insert card is just simple enough to say, hey, I'm on Facebook, look at me, without
right.
saying
it legitimizes so your business and your brand, right?
Absolutely.
Like the customer's does. Thinking, okay, this is actually something real. It's not just some guy in his garage, even though it could be technically, but it's about perception. If they see that you're all over social media and you're active with it as well, then it just gives them a good feeling, so that you've already acquired them once. They already said yes to you once.
Yep.
When you have something new in the future to offer them, maybe a new product or a promotion or a discount, yep. they liked you enough that one time, chances are they're at least going to listen to you to see what you have new. So if you yep. gave them that head-to-toe experience, that A to Z experience from, you know, the time that they bought your product to the packaging that arrived to all the other things you did with it, that's a customer that actually likes you enough that they're probably going to, like I said, at least listen or say yes to you again and again yep. and again.
Yeah, and one of those, you know, what I kind of just thought about too is, so we have that sometimes that imposter syndrome where we think, who are we? You know, we are the guys, you know, in our rooms, in our apartments, in our garages, whatever, who are making these businesses with these products, you know, so who are we to make really legitimate marketing materials or really legitimate designs? You know, are we fooling our customers? And then the answer is we're not. We're providing tremendous value because in a lot of ways we care more, much more than the big brands out there. And if we really want to care for our customers, we're going to provide these amazing customer experiences. So we should make an effort for our customers to give them a good experience, good packaging, you know, good promotions, and then, you know, a brand essentially.
Yeah, I love all this stuff, and you know, kind of want to wrap things up here in a few minutes, and I feel like we could talk about this kind of stuff forever. I'm just a huge fan of just brand building and things like that. And you know, as you mentioned, we've mentioned before, there's, you know, if you kind of fast forward a year or two in the future, the competition on Amazon and other channels as well is just going to keep going up and up and up and increasing. And you have to ask yourself this, like, is this a hobby or is this a long-term play? So if you're a listener out there, what's it going to be? And if this is going to be a long-term play, once you prove the concept that your product is going to sell, and if you want to be around for the years to come, these are the types of things that you're going to have to start thinking about, because a lot of your competition, at least in my opinion, will probably be a little bit lazy when it comes to this kind of stuff and fail to conform and adapt. So the one way that you can be better, faster than them and have more longevity is by building those customer experiences through your branding, through your messaging, through your packaging, and everything after the sale as well. So just kind of think about that for a second. You know, if you haven't even launched the first product yet, all this might be kind of over your head at this point, but just know that this is the type of stuff or the type of level that you want to ultimately get to, because a lot of your competition is going to think it's just too much work and they're just going to just keep up what they've been doing on there, and eventually they might die off. Whereas you're crushing it, you're building and you're acquiring new customers, and you just keep upgrading your value to that customer at the end of the day, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So do you have any other last tips or advice on logos, graphics, branding, marketing, anything we kind of talked about here? Any other little words of wisdom? Because you certainly crushed it with a lot of awesome resources for our listeners out there. And hopefully this got the juices going for some of these people listening to this right now. But do you have any other tips or advice for anybody?
Just love your customers. Love your customers and give them a tremendous amount of value. And whenever you have a good customer experience or you receive a really neat, you know, package, make a mental note of that and say, how can I bring, you know, a part of this experience that I just had to my own customers? And I think, like you said, Nick, this is an amazing business, amazing type of business to get into, but we need to look long-term, and building a business on Amazon is a great way to build a business off of Amazon, because we can use those sales statistics with the boutiques and say, hey, look, I'm selling really well on Amazon. I would love to sell really well for you. So that's always a thing to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Proof of concept, and it's a great channel to experiment with as well, because that's where the party is and that's where the traffic is. So you might as well take advantage of it while you
absolutely
can.
Absolutely.
So where else, Eric? Where else can people find you online right now? I know you've been putting out some material in regards to Amazon or kind of some marketing stuff. But where can people find you for more information about what you're working on and everything we've talked about?
Sure thing. You can find me at weathered.com without the E's at the end. So weathrd.com. That's a little blog that I'm keeping of just private label stuff. I'm launching a new brand right now, so I'm hoping to put a lot of material on there to learn from. Again, I'm launching this not only on Amazon, but also on our Shopify store and in the boutiques. And you can also check out Weathered on YouTube as well. That's where I posted my videos. And I'm going to pass along to Nick a brand creative brief that you can use, a template that you can use to pass off to designers. And I'm going to put together an audience finding sheet as well. Just another resource for you to get the juices flowing and build your brand.
Awesome. Awesome. So guys, this episode here, just loaded information, jam-packed with resources to help you along your journey. Eric's been awesome in delivering mega value to you guys. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Now, all those resources that we're kind of talking about here, don't worry. Like you said, we're going to have these on the blog post for this episode. So if you go to privatelabelershow.com and you find this episode, you'll be able to get all the goodies that he's kind of talking about there that will help you tremendously. So hope you guys found this information valuable. Eric, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day. I know I'm talking to you. You got a lot going on, deliveries and all kinds of good stuff with Amazon and brands and all that. So, you know, you're doing it and doing it big. So I appreciate your knowledge and your time and your energy. And I know our listeners did as well. So thank you so much.
No worries. Happy to make it.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you in the next episode. Take care. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the very end. I really appreciate it. Now, for being such a loyal listener of the show, we are offering you an exclusive discount on Jungle Scout for the Private Labeler Show community. Simply go to junglescout.com/PLS to take advantage today, or simply use the Jungle Scout link on my resources page on privatelabelershow.com. So take advantage of the savings and start finding the perfect product to sell today. Thanks.